This is John Jantz, author of The Ultimate Marketing Engine, 5 Steps to Ridiculously Consistent Growth, and you are listening to The Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to The Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, and thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast, where each week I publish an interview with the author of a new marketing or sales book, and which was named by Forbes as one of 11 smart podcasts that will keep you in the know, and named by LinkedIn as one of 10 podcasts that will make you a better marketer. Don't worry about taking notes. You can find links to everything linkable in this episode's website page at marketingbookpodcast.com. And since you're a listener to the Marketing Book Podcast, and I read every book featured on the show, if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or any other resource I know of for whatever challenge you're facing, send me a LinkedIn connection invite with a message indicating you're a listener so I won't mistake you for a spammer and ignore you, and I will do my best to get you pointed in the right direction. I do this podcast to help me and my listeners keep up with the latest ideas that matter most in the quickly changing and somewhat overwhelming world of modern marketing and sales. My day job is running a marketing agency that helps manufacturers and industrial companies grow their revenue. To learn more about the problems we solve and how we do it, visit salesartillery.com. All right, enough yakking. Let's get on with the show. Today, we welcome John Jantz to talk about his newest book, The Ultimate Marketing Engine, 5 Steps to Ridiculously Consistent Growth, published by HarperCollins. John Jantz is a marketing consultant, speaker, podcaster, and author. His other books include Duct Tape Marketing, The Referral Engine, The Commitment Engine, Duct Tape Selling, SEO for Growth, and The Self-Reliant Entrepreneur. He's also the founder of the Duct Tape Marketing Consultant Network, which trains and licenses independent consultants and agencies to use the duct tape methodology. John's small business advice has been featured in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Forbes, Fast Company, Entrepreneur, CNBC, and CNN Money, amongst others. Seth Godin called John Jantz the Peter Drucker of small business tactics. And interesting fact, he is now a member of a very exclusive club, the Marketing Book Podcast 5-Timers Club. John, congratulations on the Ultimate Marketing Engine, and welcome back to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thank you so much, and it's an honor to be in that rare air.
Yes, you, Jeb Blunt, and Joe Polizzi.
Nice.
You all have the J. It's the J Club. So
there we go.
Yeah,
as you know, I'm a fellow podcaster, and I've had those gentlemen on my show as well.
Excellent. Yes, yes. So they're as prolific as you are. So other interesting facts that I can't resist: you are the father of 4 daughters, and you're one of 10 children. And even though you live in Colorado now, you're still a diehard Kansas City Royals baseball fan.
I am indeed, and of course, depending upon when people are listening to this, I had a very disappointing late innings, extra innings game loss last night.
And you started your podcast, I believe, in 2005, and I think that was one of the very first marketing podcasts I ever listened to. I think it was back when I had to plug in my iPod into the computer.
You had to get a pod catcher or something.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And I should add that you were one of 11 authors I made a video for when I first started my podcast asking you if you would be on the show. And I have ultimately interviewed all 11 of those people. But and the first 9 were, they had just written books and they were available. But you and Seth Godin, it took me a while. But I stayed with it, and I finally have been able to interview each of you a few times. So, and I should also add that if this interview goes well, I will be guest hosting your Duct Tape Marketing podcast to interview you about this book
on my show. And I that's a slam dunk. That's a guarantee. I can. It'll actually be a second time for you. I think you did that one other time with me.
Yes, I did, with you and Phil Singleton, about SEO for Growth, which is such an excellent book. And you know what? Just this week, I was hearing from a listener, and they were asking questions about web design. And I said, you know, before you do that, you have got to read this book. And sent him a link to the interview, along with a couple other great books, and they really seem to appreciate that. And I feel like I've done what I could to help point them in the right direction. So I should also mention that this book has a lot of really great downloadable resources, which I'm going to include a link to. And there's also a video course that goes with the book. Is that right?
Yeah. So I created a companion course to give people a feel. Obviously, before the book even came out, people are consuming that companion course so they'd have a feel of some of these ideas and actually a taste of some of the resources, because the book is, I call it purely a strategy book with a workshop inside of it.
Oh, yeah.
So you know, the ideas are very, very focused on strategy, but every chapter, every action step I ask you to take, there's a corresponding tool or template or checklist. And these really have been developed because, you know, I do this stuff. This isn't just a book that I researched and had some good ideas. This is basically a distillation of a practice that I've done for 20 years.
Mm-hmm. And one of the key concepts in your book brought to mind one of my favorite books that's been on the show over the years by Tara Nicole Nelson, titled The Transformational Consumer. And I'll include a link to that interview on your episode's website page at marketingbookpodcast.com. And we're going to talk about that transformation concept here. I just want to read two things from toward the beginning of the book. It starts with, during most of 2020 and into 2021, you saw article after article proclaim the strategies needed to market during a pandemic. Most of them boiled down to some version of stop taking your customers for granted and stop spamming people. When has that ever not been good advice? Good marketing that delivers value to those who are trying to solve a problem is always in season. And it always arrives from the customer's point of view. Don't misunderstand. This is not about the customer always being right. This is about being relevant in a customer's life, about changing the context of how they view your business or industry. It's about making every other business irrelevant in their eyes. In this book, I'm going to ask you to rethink how you view your current and future customer, how you view marketing, and how you choose who you work with. Ultimately, you will get the chance to dump most everything you have been told about how to build your business. You will see that there is an entirely fresh perspective available, steeped not in what you see everyone else doing, but in what is in your heart, what serves your grand purpose, and what creates the greatest value for those you choose to call customers. And then on to page 3, you write, in this book, I'm going to take you on a marketing journey, but we won't travel the same old road you've been down before. Rather, I plan to push you to think about marketing from an entirely new point of view that allows you to create ridiculously consistent growth. So, John Jantz, I have to ask you the big question right off the bat. What is the ultimate marketing engine?
So those were strong words that you read there, Doug, so I better back those up. It is the ultimate marketing engine is a successful customer. You know, this idea that so much of marketing, the marketing funnel, all the practices that marketers use is so much about the business. It's like, how do we get the customer to do X? And what I propose in this book, and when we get to it in very practical terms, how to do this, is that we start thinking about how do we make a customer successful? How do we take them from where they are to where they want to go or where they want to be, rather than how do we sell them something? So, you know, you brought up the word transformation, and I also suggest that this point of view has us, instead of thinking so much about transactions, it's more about the transformation that we can create in the lives and the businesses of our customers. So that to me was, you know, I signed the contract for this book March 15th, which think about 4 seconds. We can all think about what we were doing. The world was coming to an end.
2020.
2020, right? Uh-huh. The world was coming to an end in most people's eyes. And, you know, a lot of my customers were scrambling and what are we going to do? And I had a customer text me. It was on a Sunday night at about 8 p.m. Long text, which was essentially going to be the content he was going to send to his 50 employees and dozens of customers the next morning, basically saying, don't come into work. You know, we're going to stop your projects. We don't know what we're going to do, but you know, right now we're putting a giant pause on everything. And I was really taken back. I saw a lot of the responses, and most of them came down to saying something like, you're doing the right thing. We'll be with you. What can we do to help? And it just, to me, it shone such a bright light on this idea that in good times, a lot of times businesses just thrive from being in the right place at the right time. In tough times, businesses thrive and survive by being meaningful in the lives of their customers. And that idea is something that I think we got away from. We've lost. and that's really the purpose of a business, is to really create a successful customer, whatever that means to the customer. But I think we have to not just say that in words. We have to actually create some very practical processes. That actually has to become the mission, I think, of our business. And that's what I propose in this book.
Yes. And there's a great quote on page 2 where you write, "What if the purpose of a business was to discover what it takes to make your customer successful? What if then you concentrated all of your efforts on that goal for an ever-expanding roster of ideal customers? What if growth came with your customers, not from them?" So the subtitle of the book, 5 Steps to Ridiculously Consistent Growth. John Jantz, let's not keep the listener in suspense here. Let's talk about these briefly, and then we'll go back into a bit more detail of these 5 steps. Okay, so the first step is to listen to the Marketing Book Podcast. And John, I really appreciate you writing the first 100 of the 200-page book all about this podcast. And then the next 50 is all about the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast. So really, I think if you just listen to those 2 podcasts, folks are going to be good. And then the third step is to read this book. So, all right, enough comedy jokes there, folks. Nowhere does he mention the marketing book.
Well, you neglected to say that both of our podcasts basically are about telling you to buy this book. Right. That's what leads to step 3.
Yes, yes. But as we already mentioned, it's more than just this book. All the resources are really helpful. And you know what? Even this knuckleheaded podcaster has downloaded a few that I'm going to find helpful. So, okay, but seriously, folks, for those that are still listening, the steps are, and I'll explain what they are here. They're map, uncover, narrow, attract, and scale. Okay, so the first one is map where your best customers are today and where they want to go. And in that section, I'd like to at least cover the marketing hourglass and the customer success track. And then the second step is uncover the real problem you solve for your ideal customers. In other words, the transformation they're seeking. And step 3 is to narrow your focus to the top 20% of your ideal customers. And the 4th is attract more ideal customers with the narrative they are already telling themselves. And the last one is scale with your customers by serving their entire ecosystem. So if that didn't get everyone's interest, I don't know what will. All very well put together and really got me doing something I hate having to do, John, which is think. So let's start out and talk about this marketing hourglass. But, you know, funnels are a very popular paradigm for marketing and sales, and I see them mentioned all the time in lots of marketing and sales books, and I think they do more help than harm. But you prefer the marketing hourglass, which has 7 behaviors, which is know, like, trust, try, buy, repeat, and refer. So can you walk us through those 7 briefly and also explain why you prefer those to just the more simplistic marketing funnel?
Well, as you mentioned, the marketing funnel has been around forever, and I'm not suggesting that there isn't some relevance to it. I just think it's terribly limiting, because most people's marketing funnels, the concept is you get a whole bunch of people up there at the top, get a few more interested, and at some point, a few squeeze out of that small part and become customers. But for so many people, that's where marketing ends. And what I suggest with the metaphor of the hourglass is, yes, it borrows from that idea of the funnel. You know, you think about the top of an hourglass kind of being funnel-shaped. But then once somebody goes through and becomes a customer, I believe the opportunity to really grow and expand your business expands at that point. For most businesses, the greatest source of leads is actually happy customers.
Yes.
So that, you know, by creating a focus on what happens after somebody becomes a customer, maybe making that the primary focus, quite frankly, once you get to a certain point, is really how you build momentum in this consistent growth that I talk about. The stages that you mentioned are. And you use the word behavior, which I'm glad you did, because that's really how I refer to it. I think so many other journeys and funnel stages are all about what we want to get the customer to do.
Right. It's all about us.
Right. And what I want to suggest is these seven behaviors are what our customers and prospects actually want to do with the companies that they come into contact with, the companies that they engage. We want to know who can solve our problem. That's pretty obvious. We go out looking. Once we start looking, we're making snap decisions. Do I like what they say? Do I like their website? Does it load fast? I mean, all those kind of snap judgments.
Yeah, a lot of this is subconscious.
It really is. It really is. But we can be conscious about how we're intentional.
Yes.
Because knowing that people do this gives us the ability to guide it. I kind of talk about, instead of creating demand, we're now organizing behavior. So once they like, then again, if we start looking at a business, we want to make sure who else likes them. Can I trust them? Will they really do what they say? Are they an expert? Do they have qualifications? So all those kinds of things. And then, I don't know about you, but I think most of us like to see what it might be like to work with a company. Of course, we all think about the 30-day free trial subscription, but frankly, picking up a phone and calling somebody, we may not actually say, I'm going to try them out by calling them, but that's what we're doing.
Yes.
So those stages have to be thought of as marketing stages. And then, of course, when we decide to buy, immediately buyer's remorse kicks in. We want that assurance. We want somebody to exceed our expectations. We want a great transaction process, a great onboarding process. All those things are things that we're looking for. Those have to be part of marketing. And then, of course, I don't know about you again. If I find somebody who solves my problems, I don't go out looking the next time I need that. I just go right back to them.
Oh, I love not having to go find a new supplier. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're wired to do that. So give us reason to do that. Show us how to do more with you. For example, I talk a lot about this idea of growing with our customers. Well, there's some percentage of our customers typically that are happy would do a lot more business with us if we showed them how. And then, of course, 92% of small businesses claim that the majority of their new business comes by word of mouth or referral in some fashion, and yet so few do anything about it intentionally. And so, I spend a lot of time, helping people understand all the ways they could really increase their referability. So what we have to understand is that if we use this framework, you really can map out pretty much all of the marketing, all of the content, all of the campaigns, all of the processes that you need to build for your entire business. And then it becomes really a matter of understanding the questions and the objectives that people have at each of those stages, and really building all of your marketing around moving people through those stages.
I'd like you to explain one thing from page 9 where you write, most marketing is an attempt by a business to go from the know stage, K-N-O-W, when they run an ad or post in LinkedIn, directly to the buy stage when customers come calling. Not only is this highly ineffective, but even if it works, it sets you up for failure.
So the assumption is that anybody out there who seems to need what I do and seems to be willing to pay for it is an ideal customer. And what I'm suggesting is that these stages are not only there to help you win business, they're actually there to help you turn business away that is not a fit. By running people through a process, guiding them on a journey, educating them on how you work, building trust enough for them to say, yeah, I really want to consider this organization, you're actually teaching them to be an ideal customer if you have those processes and steps in place. And nothing really, I get into further into the book, of course, and talk about this idea of narrowing your focus to your top 20% of your clients. Mm-hmm. And that's because most businesses have some percentage, sadly a large percentage in some cases, of business that's really not a good fit. They're not that profitable. They don't really have the right behavior or the right beliefs or mentality about, yeah, how business should be done. And yet they seem to need what we sell. And so we sell them. And I think the opportunity cost that is lost from chasing business that's A, not profitable, and in some cases maybe is creating detractors, really takes us away from the ultimate way to grow, the ultimate marketing engine, which is to really focus on those customers we can make successful. That's really one of the caveats of saying that the ultimate marketing engine is a successful customer. We can't make every customer successful. We have to figure out the ones we can actually deliver the most value to and find out how to do that in a way that nobody ever thought of doing for them. And that will create growth in and of itself.
Yeah, one of the things from Duct Tape Selling, or I think it was in there, but it might have been Duct Tape Marketing as well, the other books, were where this idea of don't take on business unless you can get a referral. Mm. You can't get a referral if you don't make them successful and, you know, get them what they truly, really, truly need. And that really had a big impact on me. Let me ask one other question before we move on, and that is, can you talk about how this marketing hourglass can help marketing and sales and service for a company get better aligned? This, especially marketing and sales alignment, is a big issue for a lot of companies, a lot of listeners.
Yeah. If you think about the stages, know, like, trust, that's really marketing's field. I mean, that's what marketing does, is creates that awareness, gets somebody to take the next step, but builds enough trust so that they maybe now contact the company and that becomes kind of try by. That typically is where the sales organization or sales department is traditionally going to play a role in. Mm-hmm. And then quite often, once somebody becomes a customer, they're handed off to customer success or customer service. And that, in many cases, is going to dictate whether or not you get more business and referral business, or at least you retain that business. So if you think about those, you know, first three stages, then two stages being the typical arrangement of an organization, I think what I've experienced when I've worked with a lot of organizations that have those kind of three very defined buckets is that often it's those handoffs between the departments that are really sloppy. Or in some cases, there's no integration. And so, you know, I'll get sales and customer service together and say, what happens when after you get an order? Well, I don't know. We just like submit a ticket and send it in. And
yeah,
the customer service person says, no, that's not what we need. I mean, it's really amazing because everybody's just doing their own thing. They're running their own little world. And this framework, I think, it at the very least, it gives them kind of a through path of like, here's the whole journey. You know, where are the handoffs? Where are the gaps? You know, where are we not exceeding people's expectations? And so it's really a very useful tool. If nothing else, it gives them a common language to really then build their own framework around.
Yeah, one sheet of music.
Yep.
Let's move on. On page 10, you talk about over the past decade or so, the concept of customer experience has eclipsed the simple idea of customer service. So can you talk about how fully embracing your marketing engine requires a major shift in how you think about marketing and, frankly, about customers. Can you explain this idea of customers as members and what the difference is between customer experience and customer service? Because I think there's a lot of folks that still group them in the same thing.
Yeah, you've had a couple authors recently, probably on your show, Jay Baer, Joey Coleman, come to mind. That have written, you know, great books about more of this idea to customer experience, and the customer experience idea, I think, really builds into the hourglass quite well because it's not. Customer service is typically, okay, when somebody calls in, what do we say? Or when somebody complains, you know, how do we respond? Or, you know, if something's not right, how do we make it right? So it's sort of reactionary.
Yeah.
And I think the idea of customer experience is, how could we blow somebody away? How could we surprise them? What wouldn't they expect to get right here?
Right. Well, not to mention, how could we have avoided this? Future, yeah.
Yes, of course, yeah. And I mean, and some of it's even, you know, how can we continue to talk to them? How can we continue to discover, you know, what else they're missing? So it's really more of an engagement mechanism as opposed to a response mechanism, I think. And the huge advancement, I think, in terms of the thinking of the customer journey. I guess what I'm trying to do in this book is take it one step farther. And to say that, you know, what if we did look at our customers as members? And I have to be quick to say, and I do say it quite a few times probably in the book, I don't mean a membership model or subscription. I'm not talking about Costco. I mean, those could all be, you know, good models for business.
Right. It might not even be a term you use with your customers, but you think of them that way.
That's right. And that's what I was going to say. It's really more of a point of view about how to view the relationship in a lot of ways. How could you have a customer thinking about joining your organization because they wanted to invest in themselves and in their business? They wanted, they were going to evangelize the cause, of you taking mm-hmm. them from where they are to where they want to be. And that thinking, to me, I didn't want to write a book about how to market in a time of COVID because nobody wants that book. But there's no question that my thinking in this book was sort of colored by sort of what I saw getting closer to their customers and really, saying, hey, we don't have to go back to what we were doing. And I think that to me, that's this idea of customers as members really kind of came out of that. And I looked at the work that I'd been doing for about 20 years, and we had effectively developed something that I now come to call the customer success track. Mm-hmm. And this is my attempt to make this tangible because, oh, nice, customers as members, take them from where they are to where they want to be. All sounds nice, good way to go, John. But I wanted to actually make it very practical. So how do we do this? So what I realized is that in an attempt to take in customers, keep customers for years. That was my goal, to retain customers for years, my longest running customers from 2004, that I had to figure out a way to mature with them. That typically people come to marketing firms in kind of a similar stage. We were able to see the characteristics of the challenges that they were having in that stage. We're also able to see that, hey, if we can move them to the next stage, then here's the promise of that. So as I got really looking at it, we mapped out five stages, and people come to us in foundation, and then they we can then level them up, and then we can organize and scale and maybe on to exit even. But our job as a marketing firm was really to kind of guide them through those stages. And because I'm really a big systems person, we take every stage and we actually broke it down into milestones. Those milestones are yes or no questions. Not is the website effective, but does the website load on a mobile device? Yes or no? If the answer is yes, then we move on. If the answer is no, then here are the tasks in order to check that milestone off. And what it did for us was it gave us a roadmap to almost guarantee that if we started looking at a business and seeing where they were, that we knew what we had to do to take them to the next stage and then the next stage. So that is something that's actually in the book. If you are interested in marketing maturity model, fully developed with all the milestones, everything, you're going to get those. But my real goal is I think this idea can apply to any business. I think any business can probably look at their best customers today and start seeing that, most of them come to us in this certain stage. Most of them have these characteristics and challenges. And even if you can't identify today, most of them want to go somewhere else. How could you start mapping out what the next stage and the next stage and the next stage would look like? And then maybe start documenting that in your entire business. And what I found is for us, it's not only marketing, it's not only our product or our service. It's really become a mission for the business to really do just what I said, take people from where they are when they join us, when they become customers, to where we ultimately think that they want to go. And it also informs our entire messaging. It informs our selling because we're now showing people a roadmap instead of a product that they can buy. It impacts our hiring, our training. I mean, it just really, I talk about it as being marketing, but it's really, I believe it's a tool that could dictate some pretty effective overarching strategy for an organization that embraces it.
Right. And it's not just the transformation of the customer. It's transforming your business. And I think it's also helpful, at least in our line of work, you've probably encountered companies over time that think that it's like a light switch you turn on and suddenly everything's working. And actually, this helps to show, we got a ways to go here, and there are certain things that need to happen first, more like maybe building a house. The one thing I wanted to ask about, though, is for you to highlight how this having a customer success track, regardless of what business you're in, how can that actually help you close more deals?
Well, I think for us, I'll use us as an example. It helps us close more deals because everybody else is talking about the tactic today.
Yeah.
And we're actually talking about the future world for our customer that you know, they're talking about, like, here's the problem I have. And how come people beat me up over price? And how come I don't rank on search engines? And so everybody else is selling them, you know, an SEO strategy. And we're basically selling them a strategy that's going to allow them to differentiate their business so thoroughly that people will expect to pay a premium for their products and services. And ultimately that, you know, will lead to recurring revenue that may allow them to, you know, exit their business. Mm-hmm. And I think that for a lot of folks, that, you know, that is the ultimate goal. They hadn't actually even given themselves permission to express it, you know, because they're mired in the, why doesn't this work? And so I think for us, it definitely helps us land business because, I mean, we hear it all the time. You've got a roadmap. and that's really what we want. Everybody else is just trying to put a Band-Aid on where we are today.
Exactly. Exactly. Let me just end with one quote. On the surface, it may seem like this step is simply asking you to document how you serve your customers. While there's little denying that outcome, when you more clearly understand the transformation your business delivers, when you know precisely that what it takes to get your customers where they want to go, you now possess the framework for every aspect of your business. Let's go on to chapter 6, which I have to say was my favorite chapter. It's titled The Real Problem You Solve. And it was also tied in very nicely with the book's epilogue, which just blew me away. It was fantastic. So there's a couple things here.
I'm proud of you for reading that far. You know, my editor said nobody reads epilogues.
I paid more attention to that epilogue, and it affected me more deeply, I think, than, well, it was unexpected, and maybe we should keep it a secret. But I really appreciate what you wrote there, and it really got me thinking about me and life. So
dang, that was the point.
Damn it! Well played, good sir. So there's just such gems in this one chapter. A couple of them I want to read here. One is, people don't buy products or services because they want them, but because they believe they will solve a problem. And you go on to write how businesses that understand, communicate, and promise to solve the real problems their ideal customers face can make a giant leap toward rendering all competition irrelevant, as we mentioned earlier. You write, no one wants what we sell. They want their problem solved, period. And just so the listener knows, that sentence was all italicized, so he really meant it. And you write, there are only a few things people actually need. Everything else can be lumped into what they want. Even if you sell rainbows and opportunity, it must come wrapped in a problem-solving package. So in this whole section, you talk about the all-important promise to solve your ideal customer's greatest problem. And you go on to write that before we go much deeper into this all-important step of crafting your problem-solving message, we need to take a look at a customer's entire decision-making process. The following three questions describe marketing in a nutshell. Think of the questions as stages of a relationship. And I want you to talk about these. I'll tell you what they are. One, do you get me? Two, can I trust you? And three, did you keep your promise? Go.
Well, so, you know, do you get me? I mean, that's the whole idea of stating the problem that you solve or that you're promising to solve. Because a lot of times people go out there searching and they actually, in some cases, can't articulate the problem they're experiencing. They just know something's wrong, that something's broken. They're not getting the results that they want. And I think that you know, if you come to a website and they say something that just like makes your brain explode because you're like, that's it. that's, you know, you get me.
Yes.
You are talking about me. Everybody else is talking about their thing.
Or themselves, yeah.
Me. Right, uh-huh. Right. And you know, goofy example I use in the book is, we had a tree service that we worked with years ago. We interviewed their clients, looked at their website reviews, and over and over and over again, people were saying they show up when they say they're going to, and they clean up the job site thoroughly. And, you know, seems like little simple things, but that was the problem they were solving. I think most people feel like, hey, you got a chainsaw and a truck, you can cut a tree down. But will you show up at the appointed time so I don't have to hang around all day. And then when I come home from work, will I not even be able to tell you're there? Because I'm not getting that from anybody else. And so we put that big and bold above the fold on their website. We made it their strategy. They had an on-time guarantee. You got a discount if they weren't there. And I mean, that's their best customers were saying, this is what we're not getting from other people. Mm-hmm. And so that's the message that says, we get you. We get what your real challenge is.
Right. And otherwise, they might have been talking about how great the chains are on their chainsaws.
Or how long they've been in business.
Yes. Oh, please, please. Oh, I had to laugh on page 75 when you wrote, few businesses promise anything, certainly not anything customers care about. They merely showcase how alike they are to everyone else. They say, look at us, we're older, bigger, more results-oriented, more cost-effective, and more partner-centric than those other companies. Oh!
Yeah.
So,
I didn't make any of this up.
But. Yeah, right. I've experienced a lot of that. But I wonder if you could just say a little bit more about the benefits of making problem-solving central to your marketing strategy and even your sales process. I mean, in other words, if more of your organization can understand the problems we solve, how much that helps?
Well, I think that marketing is everyone's job in an organization, frankly. I mean, there are very few organizations that have people that have absolutely no contact with a customer or a prospect. I mean, even if they're, you know, at home on social media, you know, they're interacting in some way, shape, or form, potentially with customers and prospects. And so, just having an understanding of the, not just the core problem. I mean, I want to nail one as a core message, but really almost every service product thing that a company does is probably addressing a number of problems. And by going very deep into that, and I actually have a whole, I think it ends up being about 30 or 40 entries that are addressing I lovingly call them the ways people whine to us, the things that we hear where they're expressing their problems. And the key is that they don't connect their problem with our solution. We have to understand their problem, promise to solve it so that they give us permission to connect that. Let me give you an example. One of the things I hear all the time from small business owners, a complaint, is that we can't charge what we're worth because we're a commodity, or, you know, people are always trying to beat us up over price. That's probably one of the biggest complaints I hear. Mm-hmm. That's obviously a problem, but it's a strategy problem is what it is. But nobody wakes up and says, I think I'm going to go out and buy me some strategy today. And so if I'm not talking about the reasons they can't charge what they're worth, or how to charge what they're worth, they're never going to listen to me when I say that your problem is really a strategy problem.
Well, let's go to the next step three, which is narrowing your focus. You write that there are plenty of customers to go around. Just remember that you don't need them all. And maybe more important, you don't want them all. Remind listeners what the terrible opportunity cost is of saying yes to everyone. I think at one point in the book, you talk about, you know, when you say yes, was it The Coaching Habit? You mentioned that book. What are you saying no to?
Yeah, and I think that's a great question. We should pin that up. And that applies to so many things, not just what we're talking about at this moment. That applies to a lot of things in life. Mm-hmm. But this step is probably my favorite. I know you're not supposed to have any favorites, but one of the reasons I like it is I think it challenges people the most. I say 20% cliche, quite frankly, because the 80-20 rule, which I've just seen to be somewhat true over the years.
Yes.
When I go, I'll tell you the step that I make people do first is I make them rank their clients by profitability somehow, and not, you know, not just revenue necessarily, but truly profitability, because there are a lot of types, people have different types of engagements that are more profitable than others, and not just total revenue. But anyway.
But that, wait, let's slow down for a second. That's really important. And I think a lot of companies are focusing more on revenue. Focusing on the profitability of customers can really change the strategy of your business and much better influence your marketing decisions.
Well, and what it does for many of the businesses I work with, I mean, I agree with you 100%, but what it really does is it shines a light on the fact that some cases, 30, 40, I've even seen as many as 50% of business that people are doing is not profitable. Maybe they're not losing money on it, but it's not anywhere near as profitable. An example I love to pick on is we were working with a waterproofing basement company, and you know, went and looked at their website. We were going to clean up their website. And first off, they had told us that 80% of their business, frankly, and certainly profit, came from pure up, straight up basement waterproofing. And yet on their homepage, there were 27 services that they offered. some of them they had done once 5 years ago.
Notary public.
So if you were a first-time visitor to their website, you'd have no idea that they were the boss at waterproofing basements. And so we actually got them to narrow it down after fighting for quite some time to three services on their homepage and really focused on the core service. And all of a sudden, their business just skyrocketed because they stopped chasing stuff that they really didn't know how to do anyway. And they certainly weren't doing any business in that, but worst, I think it was costing them because even search engines weren't ranking them as highly for basement waterproofing because we weren't talking about it enough. So that, you know, is to me was, you know, a perfect example of sort of the opportunity cost or loss that's just not seen. But we also see a lot of businesses that take on clients that aren't a good fit that they really can't add that much value to. And that's part of the equation that I don't see enough businesses factoring. Instead, they're looking at opportunity. Are they in the right industry? All the demographics, and all those things. But we really, I analyze a business quite often as being an ideal fit if I know I can deliver a tremendous amount of value quickly. Mm-hmm. To them. And there's certain characteristics that tell me that about a business and certain behaviors, certainly of the owner or the buyer. But those by understanding those elements, it really allows you to stop doing business in certain places because sometimes those clients that aren't good fits also turn into detractors.
Yes.
They didn't have a great experience because they weren't very profitable. You didn't really want to serve them, so you didn't. I mean, it's just kind of human nature the way it goes. And of course, those are always the ones that that beat a line to Google reviews and leave you that glowing two-star review. So you know, that's another reason to really get very narrow about who you can deliver the most value to, because those customers are all going to be happy. And then to me, the job of the marketer is, okay, yeah, let's go out and find more people like that, that meet that profile, but also let's start looking at ways that we can do more with that existing business. I have seen over the years that many, many businesses that we work with, that we get them to focus on this, that some percentage of their business will do 10 times as much business with them if they showed them how. And an even smaller percentage might do 100 times more, you know, because they want to. They love you. They would give you, you know, whatever you wanted or whatever you asked for within reason if they felt like they were going to get a value in return. And so, you know, you've already gone through no like, trust, try, buy with them, you know, so now. Now it's a matter of saying, okay, where are other places or other ways we can deliver value to you?
Yeah, it reminds me of a customer that would say to a business, "Oh, I didn't realize you all did that."
Isn't that the most painful thing?
Yeah. Well, you know, let's go to the last two steps. Couple questions. Step four. This is chapter eight, where the chapter title is "The Narrative is a Story," and you write, first, know exactly where your customers are, where they want to go, and what they aspire to. Then map the milestones that will get them there. Now you can attract even more ideal customers through the story that you know they are telling themselves. Can you explain that and also this the core story script?
Yeah. So first off, I probably better talk a little bit about narrative versus story.
Yeah, that's my next question.
I feel like I have to do that to set up the rest.
But yeah.
So the idea of story in storytelling in marketing, you know, there was probably one or two books 10 years ago. Now there's an entire department in a bookstore on this idea of storytelling.
Yes, yes.
You know, you've interviewed many of the authors, and there's nothing wrong with story. It's certainly an advancement over, you know, telling people who you are and what you sell and all the, you know, the features and benefits. But I think that people have become very formulaic about that. And I think that the formulaic approach to storytelling that, you know, comes from the Star Wars movie or all the other places that people get things like the hero's journey is that it assumes people are all on the same path and that we can make them jump through the hoops that we want to make them jump through. And one of the things that I think we have to understand is that many of the ways in which people move through a journey, how they show up at a stage in the journey, they're out of our control today. And so the idea behind narrative versus story, the story is the linear path. Here is the story, how it happened. A narrative is more like what a movie director would do to suck you into the story. And we're all familiar with the opening credits, a huge car chase and fiery crash, cut to the protagonist in seventh grade.
Right.
And we're like,
got my attention.
Wait a minute. You know, I want in. I want to know what caused this and what happened. And I think that that's the idea of narrative storytelling, is that we actually, in some cases, lead with, this is what your world could look like if you had this problem solved, as opposed to just saying, you have this problem, we have this solution, this is what's going to happen. And so the script, the core story, script kind of follows a little bit of that idea of, yes, there is storytelling, but it has to be, for me, the formula is, what if your world looked like this? Here's the problem that's stopping it from looking like that. Oh, and by the way, it's not your fault. here are all the evil forces stacked up against you to make sure, but by the way, there is a way to get that problem solved.
Right. But they identify themselves.
Exactly.
In that narrative. One other question about that section, John. Chapter 9, you write that your website is the hub of your marketing engine. But John Jantz, I have to ask, if it's that important, why do you cover that in chapter 9 of 10 chapters?
I guarantee you that there will be a 2-star Google review of this book that says something very similar to that. And I do address it. This is strategy before tactics.
Yeah.
And so if you haven't been able to outline, map where your best customers want to go, if you haven't been able to uncover the real problem that you solve for them, if you're not narrowing your focus and talking to an ideal customer, then your website's not going to work.
Yes.
And so that's why I've waited all the way to this point to bring it in here, because so many people come to us and say, I want to run ads because my website's not generating any conversions for me. I'm like, well, we got this little backwards.
Or like you and I over the years have gotten calls from prospects saying, hey, do you guys do websites? Well, wait a minute.
Yes, we do. That's what I say first. And then I say, but
what you
really need is a marketing strategy. Because that's, in our business, like I said, nobody goes looking for marketing strategy. They look for their website fixed. They want content. They want SEO. What we show them is how all those things have to work together strategically. But we take the business, we take the call.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if you ask good questions, you can educate with questions and get them to understand that. To say to themselves, oh, actually, I want a good website. I want an effective one. John Jantz, you could have been a mechanical engineer, I think, because, it's all about systems and how beautifully all these things are interrelated. There's no silver bullet out there. We're running out of time, but I just wanted to ask a question. Page 169, you write that most books on marketing begin with lead generation. And you write, but as you will see in the unfolding of this step, this is the last step, scaling your business. My contention is that effective lead generation is simply the logical outgrowth of the elegant implementation of the 4 previous steps in the book. Can you talk about that?
Well, it's kind of the Stephen Covey, or he probably stole it from somebody, but begin with the end in mind.
Yeah.
Idea. And that to me, so I go through those hourglass stages of know, like, trust, try, buy, repeat, and refer. And what I didn't tell you is most of the time we go through those with a client and then we say, let's go through them backwards. Let's start with referral. What do we want a client, customer, thinking, feeling, doing, 90 days after they become a client?
Brilliant.
45 days after. And really what it does is by starting there, it changes. Oh, well, we need to follow up differently. We need to show them that they got results. It's like they start re-engineering the whole company.
Yes.
Because that's now the goal. And so that's really kind of my thinking in that statement, at least. But that's why step 5, essentially step 5 is about referrals.
Yeah.
And a lot of very, I think, very deep. In fact, I do an all-day workshop just on step 5 because it really gets into some deep concepts I don't think too many people are teaching about growing with your customers.
A lot of this was new to me. And I should remind listeners, you in fact wrote an entire book about referrals. So, which I don't see a lot. I don't see as many books about referral marketing as I do about, you know, whatever, fill in the blank, lead generation or content marketing. So, well, you know, just last thing, you write that most people believe that referrals are happy accidents resulting from having done good work, but this fifth and final step is fundamentally about active referral generation as opposed to passive referral generation. What's the difference?
Well, in passive, I mean, they're really...
That's the happy accident.
Right? Yeah, that's the happy accident. It's like we do good work and people do, you know, reverse, which is awesome. But what I'm suggesting is you could get five times the amount of referrals.
Yes.
If you did some of the things I'm talking about here, because a lot of times happy referrals come from that customer that actually got to experience your brilliance, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. But that might be a small number. But strategic partners, all the other members of the ecosystem of your clients, you know, could actually be potential referrals in the hundreds. And so this book actually outlines five or six steps or processes, or not sure what I should really call them, but almost complete systems in a box for how to actually really ramp up that number of referrals and not just count on the happy accidents of of happy clients.
Yes. And like I said, a lot of new ideas that I had not, I don't think I'd seen those before, unless they were in your earlier book and I already forgot them. But, well, John, if readers took only one thing away from the book, what would you hope it would be?
Well, I think it would be this idea of thinking about their customers differently. So the customers as members, and really I'd love to see, and I encourage anybody who buys the book and takes my advice and my action steps to heart to share what they've developed as their customer success track. I think that idea could be, if there's an innovation in this book that maybe nobody is talking about, I think that's the idea that's probably the big idea of this book. And that's why I really led with that step. I'd love to hear from people on that.
Yeah. And his email address is right there in the book, folks. So
many times.
Right? Yeah. John, let's give the listener one thing to do today, just to get started in this path, putting an action idea from your book or maybe one we've mentioned.
Well, I guess the one that I would say might be a starting point is let's take a look at your customers. Try to rank them by profitability if you can, and see where you've got maybe sort of normal stratus of top 20, kind of middle. You know, we all think about A, B, C clients. That kind of thinking, you know, probably leads to some profitability thinking. And then also take a look at, are any of those referring you today? If you've got thousands and thousands of customers, it's a little harder to have that glimpse. But, you know, if you've got dozens and dozens of customers, you know, maybe you have a pretty good insight into both profitability and referability. Because those are the people, those are the businesses, the individuals that we then want to figure out, what problem do we really solve for them? You know, what behaviors make them ideal? How could we do more with them? That's going to be the start of your narrowing to top 20%.
That's great advice. And it's funny, there's an entire book written about that I've had on the show, The Customer Centricity Playbook by Peter Fader, professor at Wharton, where they talk about start with the profitability. And it's worked really well for some marketers that are starting to try to lead their organization that direction. So are there any recent or upcoming books that you recommend or are looking forward to reading?
You know, I had a gentleman on my show. I don't know where I came across him. He's a columnist for the Guardian, named Oliver Berkman, and he has a book called 4,000 Weeks, and it will change everything you think about productivity and time management. It is an awesome book. By the way, there are no hacks in this. It's really more about the reality is we can't control time, and we should stop trying.
Oh, interesting. You know, I've been exposed to that book somewhere. I've seen it around. Maybe somebody's sharing it on social. And
it's spent the first few weeks on the New York Times bestseller list as well.
Oh, yeah. Terrific.
Yeah.
Well, good. Well, at marketingbookpodcast.com, we'll include links to everything linkable, all the sites, your sites, your resources, your LinkedIn profile. And listeners, if you could do me a big favor, please reach out to John Jantz himself and thank him for being a guest on the Marketing Book Podcast. If you have a question, please ask. I have a feeling he might actually answer it.
well, and Doug, maybe when you come and host my show, we can have a discussion about why that epilogue touched you, or maybe that's better for a beer. But either way, I'd love to talk to you about that.
Will do. Yes, absolutely. I'm sorry we didn't have time to get to it. But hey, the book is The Ultimate Marketing Engine, 5 Steps to Ridiculously Consistent Growth. The author is John Jantz. John, thank you very much for returning to the Marketing Book Podcast.
I'm afraid, Doug, this might be my last book. I'll never come back on again. No, that's not true. I'll come back anytime you ask.
Thank you. Thank you. It's my honor. And that closes the book on another episode of the Marketing Book Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it and found it helpful. If you are one of the hundreds of listeners who have left an iTunes review, let me return your kind favor by mailing you some Marketing Book Podcast bookmarks and laptop stickers. Just send me your mailing address anywhere in the world and I'll drop it in the mail. And since you're a listener to the Marketing Book Podcast and I read every book featured on the show, if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or other resource I know of for whatever challenge you're facing, send me a LinkedIn connection invite with a message indicating you're a listener so I won't mistake you for a spammer and ignore you, and I will do my best to get you pointed in the right direction. And remember the words of the entrepreneur and author Jim Rohn, who said, "Formal education will make you a living. Self-education will make you a fortune." Thanks again for listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.